Let's talk sense to the American people. Let's tell them the truth, that there are no gains without pains, that we are now on the eve of great decisions, not easy decisions.
The flame which illuminated the dreams and the expectations of an entire world is now extinguished. Adlai Stevenson of Illinois is dead.
NBC News presents a special memorial program in tribute to the late Adlai Stevenson, United States Ambassador to the United Nations, who died suddenly today in London. Here is NBC News correspondent Wilson Hall.
Adlai Stevenson died today in London. The U.S. Ambassador to the United Nations died as he had lived, busily talking to world leaders and to people about peace and freedom. News of Stevenson's death at the age of 65 hit London at the end of a mild and sunny afternoon. Here's NBC's Kenneth Bernstein in London.
Mr. Stevenson, looking fit, had just left the American Embassy, the eagle-topped glass building on Grosvenor Square. When he collapsed onto the sidewalk, his friend and UN associate, Mrs. Marietta Tree, screamed for help. A doctor appeared from a nearby club, and they both tried to revive him. An ambulance took him to St. George's Hospital across the street from the Buckingham Palace Gardens, but he was dead on arrival. The last appointment before he died was in the embassy with the diplomatic correspondent of the British Broadcasting Corporation. He taped a radio interview, which the BBC is playing tonight because, in the words of a statement, we feel it accurately and effectively represents what the man stood for. For the British, dignity and eloquence were two of his most appealing traits, and he showed them in his last interview. Here is how Adlai Stevenson reacted to the idea that some of his admirers want him to disown American policy on Vietnam.
There has been a great deal of pressure on me in the United States from many sources to take a position, a public position inconsistent with that of my government. Actually, I don't agree with those protestants. My hope in Vietnam is that resistance there may establish the fact that changes in Asia are not to be precipitated by outside force. This was the point of the Korean War. This is the point of the conflict in Vietnam. I believe that Asia will be more stable in the future if the outcome is the same in both. That is to say, a negotiated line beyond which a great power will not attempt to enforce its interests on another, and a negotiated peace, a just and honorable peace, which leaves the future of the people of South Vietnam to be decided by them, and not by force. This, after all, is what we spent from 1947 to 1952 doing in Western Europe. We drew a line. That line has been, even though we may not all like it, and it's not a very satisfactory one, it has been respected by the Russians on the one side, by the West on the other. And we shall have to come to something like this in Asia.
That was why he was here, really, to explain America's policy to British officials and try to rally public opinion. As an American widely admired here, he was a natural for the job, and he liked the British, too. And here he died on a summer afternoon in London, around the corner from the eagle-topped glass embassy, doing a job for America. Kenneth Bernstein, NBC News, London.
Adlai Stevenson was elected governor of Illinois in 1948 by the largest plurality in the history of the state. In 1952, he was nominated by the Democrats to run against General Eisenhower for president. NBC's Ray Shearer covered the two presidential campaigns of Governor Stevenson.
As soon as Harry Truman announced he would not try to succeed himself in 1952, a boom started for Adlai Stevenson. He had been elected governor of Illinois in 1948 with an unprecedented majority, and Illinois had chosen only three Democratic governors since the Civil War. Mr. Stevenson said he did not want the 1952 Democratic nomination. He even said he could not accept it. Estes Kefauver had tramped the country, cleaning up the primaries. Stevenson asked his state delegation to the convention not to enter his name. But the draft talk persisted, and the head of the draft movement seemed to be Harry Truman himself. The convention, managed by Mr. Truman, Sam Rayburn, and party chairman Frank McKinney, nominated Adlai Ewing Stevenson of Illinois on the third ballot. Adlai Stevenson made the most eloquent campaign speeches in decades of American political life. He was forever tinkering with the language of his speeches. The advance texts his aides handed us during that campaign, more often than not, never got delivered. He was an entertaining candidate. There was so much wit in his speeches, and so much of it at the expense of himself, there were perpetual arguments among the campaign entourage whether he wasn't being too witty and whether, in general, he wasn't talking over the heads of the people. He talked strong language to the voters, but they seemed to prefer the more generalized speeches of candidate Eisenhower. It was Adlai Stevenson's political fate to be out of joint with the times, to come to the top the same year the Republicans picked their greatest vote-getter of modern times. Eisenhower got 442 electoral votes, Stevenson 89. In 1956, the Eisenhower margin was even greater. A reporter remembers 100 odds and ends from that 1952 campaign. The devotion of the Stevenson followers, the hole in the shoe in Flint, the buoyant train trip through California, the fireworks they shot off every time his plane returned to Springfield. But most of all, one remembers the voice in the speeches. They live. This is Ray Schurer, NBC News.
As Ray Shearer said, it was a rare occasion when Adlai Stevenson failed to delight his listeners with a flash of humor, usually at his own expense. Or he could be poignant. Following his 1952 defeat, Stevenson recalled an old Lincoln story in conceding that he had lost to General Eisenhower.
Someone asked me as I came in down on the street how I felt. And I was reminded of a story that a fellow townsman of ours used to tell, Abraham Lincoln. And they asked him how he felt once, after an unsuccessful election. He said he felt like a little boy who had stubbed his toe in the dark. That he was too old to cry, but it hurt too much to laugh.
Stevenson could be humorous, and he could, with his magnificent command of the English language, be blunt, firm, and eloquently to the point. He was particularly blunt with Russian Ambassador Zorin in October of 1962, when the United States had proof that the Russians had put missiles in Cuba.
And while you were asking, while we're asking questions, let me ask you why your government, your foreign minister, deliberately, cynically deceived us about the nuclear buildup in Cuba. And finally, the other day, Mr. Zorin, I remind you that you didn't deny the existence of these weapons. Instead, we heard that they had suddenly become defensive weapons. But today, again, if I heard you correctly, you now say they don't exist, or that we haven't proved they exist. With another fine flood of rhetorical scorn. All right, sir. Let me ask you one simple question. Do you, Ambassador Zorin, deny that the USSR has placed and is placing medium and intermediate range missiles and sites in Cuba? Yes or no? Don't wait for the translation, yes or no.
I am not in an
courtroom, sir, and therefore I do not wish to answer a question that is put to me in the fashion in which prosecutor does. In due course, sir, you will have your reply.
You're in the court of world opinion right now, and you can answer yes or no. You have denied that they exist. I want to know if I've understood you correctly.
I should like to say,
sir, will you please continue your statement? You will have your answer in due course.
Continue your statement, please. You will receive the answer in the due course. Do not worry.
I'm prepared to wait for my answer until hell freezes over, if that's your decision.
Stevenson went to the United Nations as the U.S. ambassador on January 23, 1961. NBC's United Nations correspondent, Pauline Frederick, recalls Ambassador Stevenson at the United Nations.
Even after President Kennedy appointed him ambassador to the United Nations, Adlai Stevenson wanted to be called governor. He explained that a governor is elected by the people. When he first appeared in the Security Council, he was paid a unique tribute. He was applauded, and every member made a welcoming speech. But his way at the UN was not always strewn with verbal bouquets. As you've heard, Soviet delegates soon found reasons to attack him, not necessarily for his personal views, but for loyally speaking for his government. First, it was on the Bay of Pigs, then the Cuban Missile Crisis. More recently, it was about Vietnam and the Dominican Republic. When there were Americans who said he should resign in protest against the Vietnam policy, close associates would explain that he was doing his duty by expressing his views inside the White House. No one who has served at the United Nations has been more esteemed for his intellect or more loved for his human qualities than Adlai Stevenson. Secretary General Thought said in a message to President Johnson, "Your grief is shared by all of us." The Secretary General directed that the UN flag should be lowered to half-mast and kept that way until after the funeral, the first time such a tribute has been paid to a delegate. This is Pauline Frederick, NBC News, United Nations.
2 weeks ago on NBC's Meet the Press, Stevenson was asked about the stories that he was about to resign. This is what Mr. Stevenson said.
I don't want to leave the impression, if I have, that I am opposed to this policy. I suppose every one of us would disagree on details about anything, virtually anything. And I don't hesitate to say that as to every detail of the conduct of our policy, I'm not always in agreement. Nor I suspect any of our responsible officials. And that's what you have a president for. He's the one who has to make the final decisions, however uncomfortable and distasteful they may be.
President Johnson received the news of Stevenson's death as he was having lunch with members of a Japanese trade mission. Mr. Johnson said he had first thought of canceling the luncheon, then thought that Adlai Stevenson would want the meeting to continue because he was first concerned that the works of human understanding go on. President Johnson then eulogized Ambassador Stevenson this way.
He was an American, and he served America well. But what he saw and what he spoke and what he worked for is the shared desire of all humanity. He believed in us, perhaps more than we deserved. And so we came to believe in ourselves much more than we had. And if we persevere, then on the foundation of that faith, we can build the wondrous works of peace and of justice among all the nations. He will not see that day, but it will be his day still. And so let us, therefore, adversary and friend alike, pause for a moment and weep for one who was a friend and who was a guide to all mankind.
Tonight, Vice President Humphrey leads a special presidential delegation on a flight to London to accompany Stevenson's body back home. Funeral services are expected to be held in Illinois. Adlai Stevenson, February 5, 1900, July 14, 1965. Wilson Hall, NBC News.
You have been listening to a special NBC News memorial program in tribute to the late Adlai Stevenson, who died today in London. This is the NBC Radio Network.